Welcome to Behind the Mask. I'm EJ, one of the co-hosts here. Lori T and I are going to talk about episode 56, Masks of Dysregulated Interactions. Just a friendly reminder that anything discussed in this podcast is not to be used as a diagnosis or replacement for conversations with your own doctors, therapists, psychologists, or other medical professionals.
So, hey, everyone, I get to introduce this episode, so I don't think I've done that before, so it might be a little awkward, but that's my expertise
You'll
is being
be
awkward.
great.
So today we're going to talk about dysregulated interactions. And what we're talking about when we're talking about the, dysregulated, let's start with the word dysregulated. What does that mean? In my world, it's just pretty much any time a person's emotions are so big that they're kind of acting out of their norm. So someone can be dysregulated and with anxiety. And when someone's in that space, they can, talk really fast. They can not stay on topic and just have real big, either real big body language, or even maybe more reserved. So all of these things just kind of fall under that umbrella when I talk about dysregulation. And when you're trying to interact with people when they're in that space, it can be really difficult. As a matter of fact, we can often rise to the occasion and become dysregulated ourselves. And so then when that happens, really not much is getting done in that interaction that's productive. So that's what we want to talk about today.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. I love how when we pick these topics, because we usually pick them a couple weeks before, a week before, then life just seems to flow. And I was thinking, as I was listening to your introduction, wow, I was dysregulated last night, just in a response. And then I thought about it, and I had to apologize to EJ later. I was like, I'm not a person to curse. I really don't. It's not part of my normal everyday verbiage, except when I get dysregulated, except when I have that over the top reaction. If there's this buy-in, if I'm not paying attention to what's going on, and it's an absolute cue to EJ that something is off. Oh my gosh, Lori is cursing. There are curse words coming out of her mouth. Oh my gosh, and I'll get to like the, and I was like, oh wow, I'm really being adamant about this. I'm vehement. And I was like, wow, where is that coming from? And by the time I was able to go to bed, I did, and I did apologize, and I was able to come back down. Thank goodness I was in a safe environment. And I'm sure we'll talk more about that too. Where are you when you are having this dysregulated? Hopefully you've got a healthy roommate, healthy tribe, healthy friends in your life. People you can process with. And I was in a great environment, a loving environment. And she was loving me through my dysregulation last night.
Yeah, I just sat there because I'm like, okay.
You didn't rise to the occasion.
I didn't rise and get as anxious or act out because I could tell, okay, she's responding, well, she's reacting, not responding.
Yes. Right.
And I'm like, I'm not going to feed into that, because if I feed into that, then it's going to make it worse for her. And then I'm going to get triggered. And I already have my own triggers when people raise their voices and, start cussing and raising their voices at me. So I had to So it was, it's not ideal, but yeah, I sat there because I'm like, I'm just going to let her verbally vomit. And then, once the venting or the calm, she can calm down a little and we can talk kind of through this regularly. then I'll respond. Because, and I feel bad, because we've had other times where, something similar has happened, and I feel bad not saying anything because I don't want her to think I'm not listening. But on the other hand, I'm like, I am not going to engage with the outburst, because I know I've had my own outburst before, and I get emotionally like dysregulated, and I kind of, get unreasonable sometimes. And I, sometimes it's been in a, like a comfortable environment. Other times it's not been. And I'm glad last night was definitely in a comfortable environment for Lori. So when she was, had that, she was around people she trusted, and that we could work things out. And yeah.
So you touched on something that's important. So let me talk about what's going on inside the person who's dysregulated. You said the word unreasonable, which means that person can't reason. And you're absolutely right. Once a person is in that state, they cannot reason. The front part of their brain that's in charge of regulating emotions, regulating behaviors, making plans, being able to understand if I do this here, this is going to happen here. That part of the brain shuts down. Because when the person gets into that state, there's the part of the brain that's called the amygdala that kicks on, has kicked on and said, something about this situation is not safe. And when we're not safe, we go to this reactive state. So like, I'm either going to run or I'm going to fight. So if the person goes into fight mode, that means they're going to get angry and irritable and just really kind of like they're ready to attack. Person who goes into flight mode is looking for any way to escape. And so they can look very chaotic as well, because that's all their brain wants them to do is to escape. Meanwhile, they're trying to resolve the situation, which can add its own stressors, because they're recognizing, hey, I'm not doing this right. I need to figure this out. But they're not, that front part of the brain is not online to help them. And so, yes, very unreasonable. And trying to reason with a person when they're in that state is counter. It just doesn't work, because it's just, you're trying to access a part of their brain that's not there. So sometimes remaining quiet is a good response, because it just gives that person space to try to come down, and without that pressure. Because a lot of times, when we go into that dysregulated state, we're in a situation where it's because, we're dysregulated because there needs to be results. And there can't be. So now you're just spinning your wheels. And so, and you feel that pressure.
Yeah. So I think too, part of the reason I wanted to bring up that little scenario that happened is that I think sometimes with some of these bigger words and these trauma connected words, we think it's gotta be only in response to like something really big or really tragic or, but I think that, well, I know that that's not true. But I also know, I have my own counselor, and we have you in our lives, T, and there are people that are more prone because they have had some massive traumas within their lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's the new word? Complex.
Yeah, complex PTSD, complex post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right, and it's when a person has had multiple events, right?
Mm-hmm.
Traumatic events compounded. Right. And not, right. And it doesn't have to be the same thing. It could be, but it could be just multiples of different traumatic events, right?
Right.
Traumatic things. And so, but I think, so I feel like I've learned through my counseling and therapy that I know that I'm prone that way. When I'm not processing, when I'm not getting the sleep that I need, when multiple things, which is kind of interesting, this week had multiple things leading up to, and all of a sudden, this little response that, EJ gave me, and I just like went off the deep end, and I was like, oh, and I'm learning, no, we're not to the kind of the, we always kind of have these two different sides, but I've learned the biggest thing I can do to pull me out is to give myself grace and be like, to recognize it. Oh, you're in that space, Lori. You're giving this, you're giving, your traumatic response. And then to say, it's okay. Now come out of it. It's like
Right.
I kind of had this little,
So,
but if I can recognize it and then give myself grace, it's the best thing I can do.
right.
For me, I don't know how that would work for someone else, but for me, it
So
worked.
I want to touch base on the fact that this doesn't have to be necessarily labeled as a trauma response when someone is in this dysregulated state, because our brains and our systems are designed to keep us safe. And we all have our own personality traits. We've talked about that in the past. There's a lot of factors that go into it. But anyone who is under stress is going to have this response to some degree or other. Now, some people can manage stress either because they've learned it or it fits into their, how they just operate in the world. Sometimes people are clueless enough to not get stressed out about a situation. It just depends. But the fact of what it boils down to is it's a part of our brain that's reacting and responding. And its sole job, that part of the brain, is to keep us safe. Even if there's no trauma there, it's just a piece of the whole. And it can hijack us. It can hijack anyone. Now, those who have experienced trauma, it's like that switch has been primed or is already on, but is really easy to switch on to. As a matter of fact, it's just kind of happens because it's happened so often. So, but you can learn, and Laurie, you kind of touched base on that too. You can learn to do things differently. And it doesn't always have to be labeled as a trauma response. And I think that's something I work with my clients the most is they have very normal reactions or responses to something. And they're like, oh, I was triggered, or that's just my trauma response. I'm like, oh, there comes a point where it's not. It's a normal response, but you just want to do it differently.
You
So
are
we
teaching
don't
my
have to
therapist.
give it those labels.
Yes. I just had that conversation the
I
other day. It's like,
do that
Lori,
all the time.
you realize that was a very normal response to that scenario. And I was like,
Right.
oh, that's normal? Other people. It
I do think it's
was
funny that you and I end up having similar conversations that you have with your therapist.
great.
Like timing, and we don't even know it. So,
Right? It's great. It's great. I love it.
Because I know for me, my experience when I'm dysregulated, it's definitely not ideal to tell me that. Because I
Yeah.
will definitely fly off the handle even more.
Why? Why do you think that is?
Because I already know that I'm stressed out or that I'm dysregulated, that like I'm, because okay, so there's sometimes I'm imagining, this I've not experienced, but people can kind of like disassociate with their body when they're in this, s situation. So then they don't realize what they're doing. So then when you tell them, it just compounds the situation. And
Can
I'm
also
sure
make
some
them
people,
feel invalidated.
yeah, like, oh, you're just a trauma response. It's fine. It's like we get it or whatever. So I definitely know, like in my situation, like there was a few times my mom had to say, okay, you're having a, breakdown. I'm like, no, I'm not. And, just went off on her. And then I obviously had to apologize later. And I'm sorry. I didn't mean to, just, and so I know, like, had in that situation that Lori described, had I said, okay, you're reacting, you're having this response, you're being, I would have been, it would have made those situation worse, which is why I just sat there, because I'm like, I'm not going to just, I'm not going to fuel the fire, and I'm not going to build onto it. But what I was going to ask, Tina, with you had mentioned the complex PTSD. If people have had like multiple traumas in their lives, is it possible for people to have, like, because of one situation, they have a trigger, and then because of another situation, they have a completely different trigger that can cause them to do something different than what the other trigger causes them to do?
Yeah, because the body does what it knows. So, yeah, absolutely. You can have different reactions to different things because you've been there before. And so our brain and our system wants to do the shortest route possible. So it's going to go to the one it knows until it learns something different. And so, yeah, we can definitely be primed to behave in a certain way in certain circumstances. For example, let's say, we all know that I'm a bit of an introvert, have some social anxiety. So for me, if I'm going to get dysregulated, it's usually going to be something around that. Not always. Bullies will throw me there too. But anyway, but I might get dysregulated around something like that. Well, my response has always, used to be, well, then don't do it. Don't do that thing that makes you uncomfortable. And so that was would be if I was presented and put in a situation where I needed to be social, I would have withdrawn and went away because that's what I'd always done. What I had to learn to do is step in and embrace it and get through it and learn from it. But that was hard to do because my initial response, my initial reaction would be to move away from it because it was uncomfortable. So yes, and it's if it's a trauma response dysregulation, there are going to be quote unquote triggers. There are going to be things that set it off. But I'm real hesitant when I talk about that part of this topic because sometimes we can label something and it makes it true all the time. And it makes it harder to make the changes because, kind of like what we just alluded to, like sometimes it's a normal reaction. It's not a trauma reaction. If we label a trauma reaction, we never give ourselves a chance to heal from it. And we just carry that like it's a cloak, like it's something to keep us safe and comfortable if we hold on to that label. So sometimes it's just learning that, okay, at one time, this is what I did to stay safe through a trauma, but it turns out it's a normal reaction as well.
I think that for me last night, it wasn't a trauma response, and I could clearly see that.
It was a
It
stress
was
response.
a stress response. It was an accumulated response because I'd had a very there was a lot of emotions going on through my week. I had some experiences with my children, getting ready for a big trip. So there were emotions, there were stressors, I wasn't sleeping well this week. So you add all those things up, and then that's that, you know. It wasn't a trauma response. It was a stress response, yeah, definitely. And an accumulation of several things that built to that perfect little storm, you know. And I think that is normal. That's human. That's the way we are, which is why I know we've talked about it on this podcast before, and why we talk about how important processing and not letting these things build up, right? And not, we have to get them out, right? Or we're gonna be the volcano or the, you know, the top that blows, right? And so, you know, maybe this, before we do that though, I was thinking maybe this is a good time to go into like what are some of the tools and things that we can do. So you've talked about the brain. I don't remember all the parts and pieces as well as you do, but when you're a teenager, that frontal lobe, right, it's not finished being developed. This is why we see, and EJ brought it up. I used to blow up at my mom, you know, and I think when we often think about this, we think about stressed out people at work, right? Like, what's that? You, going postal, you know? Really sad, you know, response, but you know, you blow up, right? You're really stressed out. Or we often think of teens.
Yes.
And so why is it with teens? Is it part of that frontal lobe and there's just emotions out of
Yeah.
control?
Our precious teenagers.
Yes, they're so fantastic.
So they are a little interesting nugget is when I took abnormal psychology in adolescence or something like that, one of the things the instructor said is you can give them these tests that test for like personality disorders, you know, narcissistic, antisocial, psychopaths, stuff like that. You give that to a teenager, they're going to score on all of them. There are little antisocial psychopaths. But anyway, what is happening is so that front part of the brain, which regulates so much of what our higher order stuff is, so you know, regulates our emotions, regulates our behaviors, helps us to interact in social situation, make plans, all these things, like it's the captain. But that really isn't done until you're in your mid-20s. So you know, that's why there's so much controversy about when should we let our teenagers drive? When should we let them vote? When should we let them do this? Let them do that? Because they really aren't in a great situation to make great decisions. Now, any teenager out there listening, please know that I'm not saying you don't have value because that's one of the things they feel. They feel undervalued and undermined all the time. And they have It is insanely difficult to live in this world as a teenager. There's so, I mean, we can do a whole episode on that, I'm telling you. But here's the thing. How they gain that expertise is through practice. So all the structure is there, but the neurons are still forming their pathways. And so how they get to that point where we would like to think we are is through practice and trial and error. And but it needs to be in a safe environment for them to do that, to be able to get the right bandwidth, I'm just going to call it. So, but yes, there are significant differences between a teenage brain and an adult brain. And us adults often forget that they're teenagers. So we have these expectations of them to behave like an adult, but then we tell them, you're just a kid. What do you know? So we give them those mixed messages. So, like I said, that could be a whole other topic that I'm very passionate about.
But I'm very glad. I just wanted to touch on it because I know we it, and you'd mentioned it. I thought, yeah, there's something a little different there, you
Yes.
know,
Yes,
but
absolutely. Absolutely. Very unique
and then
stage.
right, and then when you know, and I'm thinking about some particular ones in my head, but that I know when a child goes through trauma, they then can get stuck in that it's hard.
Developmental stage.
Yes, that they get stuck in that developmental stage, which is why it's so crucial, right, to work with these kids and go through that stuff because it will stunt and make it more difficult to finish all that developing and maturing and growing because of the trauma, right?
Right. Not every time, or you know, God gave us these great what we call plasticity of the brain, so things can get rewired and whatnot if the right things are in place for these kids. Because certainly not every kid who's gone through abuse grows up and has, you know, they have a very normal, healthy life because they figured it, they figured that out because they had somewhere modeled for them, and they were able to do something. They just happened upon really great skills or whatever. And then you have some kiddos who just don't get that and they can get stuck in that.
I love the elasticity of human.
Plasticity.
Yes, elasticity. It's part of the miracle of being human, right?
We can adapt.
Yes, we can. So let's talk about how we adapt, how
Sure.
we grow. What are some of the tools we're going to put in our toolbox?
So, some of it's been, we've kind of talked about some of it, just not, straight up identified it. First of all, we need to talk about whether we're talking about within ourselves, how do we keep ourselves regulated or get ourselves back to regulation, and how we can help others who are dysregulated. How do we interact with another person that we see as dysregulated? And so we've
Yes.
talked about both. The key with ourselves is knowing ourselves. So what is my point of no return? If I don't do something about this feeling, it's going to go to dysregulation. So if I'm anxious and I don't recognize I'm anxious, I'm going to go all the way. So I first have to know what I do when I'm dysregulated, or when I'm heading that direction. And so for you, Lori, it was recognizing that you cuss. When you're hitting that ceiling, you start cussing. Well, what's happening just before that? What were things that you would have recognized just before that? Sometimes it might be having thoughts of like, I need to escape.
I like to run away.
I need to get away. That will be one of mine, right? Like if I've got these thoughts of like, oh my gosh, I got to get away. So kind of recognizing what thoughts are coming just beforehand, what's your body doing? We each of us are in tuned in different ways. I might be more in tune to my thoughts. EJ, you might be more in tune with what's going on in your body. Laura, you might be more in tune with your behaviors. What do you do? So, and what are the emotions? So just knowing those is the first step. A lot of times just knowing those allows you to communicate while your front part of your brain is still on of like, hang on, hang on. I need a moment. I can feel that I'm not having a great response here. Can you just give me a second? So being able to communicate that to others. So that's
Wonderful.
what we're experiencing. Now, my favorite part is what to do when someone around me is dysregulated. How do I not feed the fire? That's one of my favorite conversations with my clients. Let's not feed the fire. Pick your battles. Is this the hill you want to die on? Because they're going to kill you if you keep going. But that's a big part of it too, is coming back to knowing yourself, not rising to the occasion because we want to, right? Monkey see, monkey do. We want to go where they're at. That's our natural state, or way of doing things. So not going there, staying calm, sometimes being quiet, EJ. That's there's especially when you know the environment's safe. She's safe, you're safe. It's okay to be quiet and present. But also in my experience, people who are in that place need to know they're heard. So sometimes it's okay to come back with, I can see that you're really upset about this. I'm just going to be present. Let me know if there's something more I can do. If they can hear you, sometimes they're in a place where they can't hear that. They can't make that much sense of what you're saying at all. Because unfortunately, that part of our brain that understands language and communicates is towards the front as well. So it can get caught up in that dysregulation where they're not understanding what's coming in and they can't tell you. So just creating that environment in which they can just kind of come down naturally. The other thing is accessing the monkey see, monkey do neurons. That's what I call them. Sorry, they're mirror neurons. But anyway, is modeling what you need that person to do. So staying seated, EJ, was great because that if you would have stood up into it, her re reaction in her brain would have been like, oh, there's a fight. There's a confrontation. Now I got to get that, make sure that's all on gear too, or run away or whatever. So staying in that seated position, if you'd already been standing, that would have been fine to stay that way, but to sit down is fine too. But it's also taking real deep breaths, almost obviously, because that part of the brain that's going to want to copy that is in a different part of the brain than the front. It's just going to do that, but it's going to allow that oxygen to come in and help regulate. And I also Well, if someone starts getting like right here, I will turn slightly. So if they're like this, I will slightly turn. I don't turn away, just slightly turn, and I'll even cast my gaze away and just kind of check in, because that also disengages that amygdala and says there's no threat here.
I love how the brain works. That's amazing. It's
And
so
it's just
cool.
recognizing that they can't talk to you, so don't get upset if they can't. But eventually they will. And when they can talk, just observing, just checking in, letting them know you're hearing what they're saying. You don't have to agree, but you're hearing what they're saying. So it's like, if it's kind of like what you guys were talking about last night. I've been like, Gloria, I see that you're really frazzled right now. I'm wondering if there's something we can do to kind of help bring that, make it okay, And if you would have been saying, people are stupid and blah, 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 all this stuff, you could have been, it's something like, yeah, right now it looks like people are really stupid. You're not agreeing. You're saying, yeah, right now it looks like, so you can do those things, but then that person eventually they kind of catch on, like, okay, they're hearing me. I'm not just out in the wind, and they can kind of anchor into that.
I love it. This was a great topic. I'm glad we chose it.
We can go on for hours.
We could.
And because I was kind of skimming over our notes, because I want to make sure we covered everything we talked about. And I know we had brought up even first responders often will find people in a very dysregulated state.
Yes.
I know it's said commonly and often paramedics and the fire department and stuff that they usually see people on their worst day.
Yes.
And so normally they've gone through a trauma or a husband or wife, they're, or a couple is in a car accident and one of them is more severely damaged than the other, and they're the other one's worried and freaking out. And so the first responders are, I know, are taught a lot of dysregulation, de-escalation talk,
De-escalation.
de-escalation skills, to recognize when they need to de-escalate the situation. Police officers the same way. So it's not just us as humans, but there are certain professions that are also trained more in this too, because of oftentimes the some toxic, hostile, emotionally stressed, traumatic situations. But they're also human too. And I have to remind myself when, there's a, you hear of a firefighter that goes to a counselor. Well, there may be a reason for that, and that's, I think, good. Like, that's good to keep their mental health in check. Because we always talk about if we can't put our own oxygen mask, if we don't put our own oxygen mask on first, how are we going to help somebody else?
So it's really cool as you're talking about that. I actually, as you ladies know, just got selected to go to do a presentation on this topic in front of a group of people that include law enforcement. So first responders, attorneys, I think there's doctors that go too, as well as social workers and mental health. It's for the Children's Justice Conference, and that's what I'm going to go talk about, is how do you talk to a dysregulated caregiver? Because that's what they're faced with, on a regular basis. And they're trying to get their job done, the things they need to do to make, to help this child. But they're having to manage some other stuff that comes with it. So, yeah, definitely.
I think we should talk some more about this because some more things came into my mind as we were, hearing this. I always, I know I've shared in here before that I was an event coordinator. And I say every time, funerals and weddings bring out the best and worst in people. But they're under stress. They're big occasions within life, right? And then there's communication. Our church, just a couple weeks back, put on a communications course, and the kids were sending me some of the notes, and oh, mom, this is who you are, and they were trying to identify, I think. And I know we've done that before. We've talked about our personalities. It is a part of everyday life, and yet it's very connected with traumatic things. And so I think it's just really fascinating in my mind that something as simple as and beautiful as a wedding could be have some kind of similar response within a person as getting in a car accident, having a trip, right? Because the dysregulation, this very simple word, we're dysregulated. We're not where we normally are. We're not in that position with which to respond appropriately.
Stress and trauma access the same parts of the brain.
It's amazing.
And I think I touched on it or mentioned it. It's the diff there is a difference between reacting and responding. The reactions usually come pretty initially, and then the responding is usually after a time of processing and thinking out of how you reacted, how the other reacted, and so it's important to know that. So when you come across that, you can kind of say, okay, is this person responding or are they reacting to? And responding can still be kind of heated and angry if they're very passionate about what they're talking about. But oftentimes that comes with, like, I know for me, it comes after a day or two of processing or seeking advice or talking to other people. And, like, whereas reacting is usually like immediately, or the defensive mechanisms of, somebody calls me out for something I did or didn't do right. And then it's my response is wanting, or I initially want to react by saying, something to the point of it's, forget it, or I don't know. I'm sure I'd come up with some other, very unhealthy way of responding or
So
reacting.
I have some notoriety in my circle of people, including at work, for being a bit reactive sometimes. And I don't always put the brakes on my mouth before it happens. And so I'll have a reaction to something. And one of the gals at work, one of my bosses is awesome about looking at me going, okay, Tina, are you reacting or is that what you really think? I'm like, oh no, I'm reacting. Give me a minute. I'll tell you what I really think in a more appropriate manner. So, but she's really good at like checking in, like, is this really what you think? Because if it is, great, we'll go with that and we'll figure it out. But a lot of times it's not what I really think or feel. I'm just having a reaction to it. And once I give it more thought, I realize, okay, there's more to this than meets the eye. So yeah, definitely known for that, for having a reaction. It's usually to situations where there's a power and control scenario, so there's usually a bully involved. And I'll have very quick reactions to that without even, giving myself time to think. So far, I haven't gotten myself in too much trouble, but it remains to be seen. I have
You've
time
got
left.
that safe environment around you.
Yeah. Problem is, I also have a very expressive face, apparently. So when I go to certain like workshops or certain events, and they talk about topics that I have feelings about, I have to hide because people can see it on my face. That's okay.
Body. I talk a lot about body language, and I sometimes I think I drive my roomie bestie over there crazy, but
I love body language.
I see it, and I'm like, yeah, well, that's what you said, but that's not really what you said,
That
because
might
your
be a good,
body, yeah, we should, because your body gave 20 other answers and none of them were
Right.
what
It
they said.
is a big piece of how we interact with people and
Yeah.
how we can maintain us, get a help a person come back down is through body language. So, but it's a big and broad topic in and of itself, and
Yes.
just the basics of it. I'm not an expert on it, by any means. I'd like to
I
be.
think we
That's
should
really cool.
seek out a specialist in this area and get them on the show.
That
And
would be awesome.
yeah, we'll have to
But
work on that.
I definitely, there's I have some favorites that I like to watch talk about it and whatnot. But we're all a type of expert, in my opinion, because that's what we do. That was our first form of communication was body language as infants.
Right.
So yeah, we're all sort of experts on it. It's just finding the right words and
Yeah.
attaching the, attaching it to the right stuff. But
Yeah.
the basics of it, I think we could definitely talk about, and it's definitely a piece of how we can de-escalate situations.
Yes.
That's what I was talking about when, someone's right here being able, and I do this with teens and little kids, if they're like on fire, I'm kind of like, I don't want a part of that fire. I'm going to stand back here for a second.
Well,
And that's what that kind of communicates is like, okay. And then turning back when they're doing, when they're in that place that you can work with them, then kind of turning back. So,
Great stuff.
yeah. And I feel like we could definitely talk a lot more about this. We may have to revisit this topic in the future in a different way or
Yes.
something. But you guys have any final thoughts before I close this out?
Just that I always enjoy chatting with you ladies like this. I really enjoy it. I love the place we come to. I love the pot. We start with the negative and we end on the positive, and we really dissect these subjects, and it's encouraging to my soul, and I know the listeners that I speak with, the people that are listening. They like what we're talking about. And so thanks for doing this, and let's keep doing it together.
Just a friendly reminder that anything discussed in this podcast is not to be used as a diagnosis or replacement for conversations with your own doctors, therapists, psychologists, or other medical professionals. This episode is on YouTube and most major podcast platforms. If you're not a subscriber, we'd love for you to be one, so don't forget to like and click the subscribe button to keep up with our future episodes. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Threads as Behind the Mask PC. You can also email feedback or future episode ideas to behindthemaskpc@gmail.com. To find us, EJ, Lori, and T online, links for us will be in the description of this episode. And on behalf of the ladies and myself, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.